Hello and welcome to Unabridged, the weekly podcast where teachers take on books. This is Sarah. Join us for bookish episodes and a monthly book club pick.
This is Ashley. Find us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at Unabridged Pod, or go to our website, unabridgedpod.com, where the books we read are linked for purchase.
This is Jen. Check out our Teachers Pay Teachers store, our Patreon page, and our newsletter. Please rate, review, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts to support us. You want opinions about books? We've got them.
Hi, and welcome to episode 155 of Unabridged. Today, we are discussing our reading challenge updates. So we set those in January. In episode 109, we talked about what we had selected. And then in episode 131, we gave a mid-year check-in. And so now as we're approaching the end of the year, we wanted to give, I would say that they are not quite our final updates, but they are a status update as we approach the deadline of the year. So we're going to share those with you today. Before we get started with our bookish check-in, we just wanted to remind you that we are very active on our website, unabridgedpod.com. We post our bookish faves on Mondays. We post pub day shout outs on Tuesdays. Of course, our episode show notes are there on Wednesdays. And then on Fridays, we have book reviews. So if you haven't checked those out, be sure to see what we're up to as far as the blog goes. And if you're liking what you see there, if you could share that on social media, that helps us so much to share what's going on the website. So again, it's unabridgedpod.com. And if you're liking what you see, you can share using the buttons there, or you can just tag us on any social media posts. And that helps us to let people know that we have those in addition to our episodes. We wanted to get started the way we always do with our bookish check-in. So Sarah, what are you reading right now?
So I am continuing with my theme for the last, it feels like forever. I'm reading Jessica Redland's Starry Skies Over the Chocolate Pot Cafe. And
that's the best title ever.
Well, in a weird twist, it used to be called Christmas at the Chocolate Pot Cafe, but they changed the name. So if you've seen the book with the other name, it is the same book. So I don't know why they changed it. It was re-released with a new title. Anyway, so this is the story of Tara Porter. She is the owner of the Chocolate Pot Cafe, and Christmas is a difficult time of the year for her. I haven't gotten too far into the book, but I just know that this is a difficult time and she has some secrets weighing her down. I don't know what those secrets are. And so basically from what I can tell from reading the summary on the book jacket and just what I've read so far, she has closed herself off to letting people in, and she is going to have a journey where she figures out how to let people back in. And again, this is a nice, cozy book that seems to be the theme of my fall and winter, and I'm here for it. So that is Jessica Redland's Starry Skies Over the Chocolate Pot Cafe.
That sounds great, Sarah. Sounds like a good one. What about for you, Jen? What are you reading?
So I am reading one. Okay, let me just say, I was hoping to have this one done for this episode because I'm reading it because of Book Riot's Read Harder Challenge, which I will talk about soon. And I was desperate to have one more checked off my list. And so I'm sharing it with a little bitterness because I did not quite finish it. I am still currently reading Edward Lee's Buttermilk Graffiti, A Chef's Journey to Discover America's New Melting Pot Cuisine. I am really loving it. So I am skipping all the recipes because, as I've established on the podcast, for many years, I do not cook. I love my husband. He does all the cooking in our home. And that's not the only reason I love him. But anyway, but this one is just a great reflection on the history of cuisine. So Edward Lee found his beginnings as a chef in New York City, but now he lives in Kentucky. And so that's where the title comes from, Buttermilk Graffiti. He sees these two different threads of his life coming together. His ancestors are from, I believe his parents immigrated, but I'm not positive, from Korea. And so he talks about the way he brings all of these different parts of his identity, his Korean ancestry, his that sort of New York sense of food and adventure, and then just some Southern cooking to his restaurant. And he wants to find other chefs in other parts of the country who do the same thing. And so each chapter is this little essay of him going to explore a different place in the United States, meeting different people, but they aren't the traditional cuisines of that region. So there's a part that was very dear to my heart where he's in West Virginia and he's talking about pepperoni rolls and where that tradition came from, why that's a big part of the Appalachians. And he talks about slaw dogs or West Virginia hot dogs or whatever you want to call them. It's just really interesting. He's a great writer. And I think the threads that he is pulling through that are on the surface about cuisine, but are really about culture and heritage and identity, both as individuals and as a nation, are just really fascinating. So that is Edward Lee's Buttermilk Graffiti, and I am just loving it.
That sounds great. That sounds really fascinating.
Is it a hard, I mean, I know it's a part of the Read Harder Challenge, so, but I feel like it's a book that I would love.
I think both of you would really like it. The Read Harder part is just the categories that you are meeting that you're challenging yourself to read. Gotcha. Categories that you would normally read. And that's definitely, I'm definitely doing that since this is not something I normally would pick up. But yeah, it's a, I don't think it's a hard read at all. I think you all would love the recipes too, since you all do cook. But the essays themselves are really beautiful. I'm finding them to be really poignant. So yeah.
That sounds great.
Ashley, what are you reading?
So I am reading Sofia Segovia's The Murmur of Bees. And I am actually both listening to this one and reading it on the Kindle. And that is working really well. I don't do that very often. I don't have the WhisperSync stuff. And I find that often I listen to things on audio because I don't have access to them as a print copy. So that's part of how I choose to listen to it on audio. But I had this one already, and it's been nice to have both. So that has been a good experience, but I am absolutely loving this book. I chose this one for part of the challenge. This is a work in translation, and it is her first one to be translated. She is a Mexican writer, and it is lovely. It is complex. I was thinking about how to give a check-in on it, and it's pretty difficult to summarize easily, but because there's a lot of characters and there's a lot happening, but it's a really rich story. And I would say at its core that it centers on Simon Opio, who is he is at the center of a lot of what's happening. And he is this fascinating character. He was found by, so there's this wealthy landowner family, Beatrice and Francisco, who are the, like, their big part of the story also. And so they have all these people who work for them and those kinds of things. And so a lot of the story centers around what's related to their family. But one of the people who is with them on their property gets a sense that there is a baby out there who needs help, basically. And so she goes and finds him. It has been abandoned, as far as they can tell. He is disfigured, and he has a blanket of bees on him as an infant. And so she returns with this infant and cares for him, Nanoreja, and she's kind of her own legend of, like, really has been with them a really long time. She is, like, part of the fabric of the land. Anyway, so she's a kind of mystical person, and then she finds this boy, Simon Opio. And because of his deformity, he does not speak, but he is this really fascinating character. And he has a sense of he just has a very kind heart. And he has this amazing relationship with the bees who stay with him throughout his life. And in a lot of ways, he understands things about the world that other people do not. And he uses that understanding to take care of the people around him. And so it's just a really sweet story of, we've talked before about, he's not the narrator, but we've talked before about, like, child characters who have that precociousness and awareness of the world. And he's definitely in that category. Obviously, there's some magical realism in the story as well. And I am really loving it. I will say it takes place in the early 1900s. And so it's set amid the Mexican Revolution and also the influenza of 1918. Mm-hmm. And of course, when she was writing the book, we were not in our current time. That's not the focus of the book, but I would say for people, I love it. It is not a heavy story. It's a beautiful story that is richly told, but there is a haunting feeling of some similarities between now and 1918 that, of course, Segovia would not have known when she was writing it. So there's kind of that prophetic feeling of some of the things that she's describing that we are experiencing in our society, which I found fascinating and I did not mind, but that is something to be aware of because, again, that's not the focus of the book, but it is eerie, some of the similarities. Anyway, I am fascinated by it. It just reminds me of how much I love the works I have read in translation, and that often books that are translated are really great, and that's part of how what leads to them being translated. So I'm so glad that I'm reading it. I really love it, and I love the tone, I love the atmosphere, and I love the characters in it. It's really well done. So again, that's Sofia Segovia's The Murmur of Bees.
I really want to read that. That's on my list.
And to wrap up our bookish check-in today, we are thrilled to have Sally with us. She is one of our Unabridged ambassadors. You can find Sally on Instagram with the Bookstagram community at Phoenix Lib. That's Phoenix L-I-B. We'll link to her handle in the show notes. And she is here today to talk with us about what she's reading right now. So check it out.
Hey, ladies. Thank you so much for having me on the show. I am seriously fangirling at being able to be here. Listening to you guys every week is awesome. But thank you again for having me on. To the Unabridged podcast world out there, my name is Sally, and I'm really excited to be able to give my own bookish check-in. I am currently reading Jennifer Donnelly's Poisoned. It's a fairy tale retelling. To be honest, I love reading fairy tale retellings. They really give like new perspectives or side views that I hadn't thought of before, or kind of backgrounds that I hadn't seen or thought of. I really, really enjoy them. So when I saw this one after I had read Jennifer Donnelly's Stepsister and enjoyed it, I was really excited. So when you start reading it, and I promise I am not going to give away any spoilers, but when you start the book, it's Sophie, our princess, in the woods with her huntsman. So she's got her protection to keep her safe. What happens when your protection is the thing that's not safe? The reader literally gets slapped in the face with the huntsman throwing her down and cutting her heart out. So now we're on page, like, I don't know what, or minute five, let's say, of the movie, if it was a movie, and our main character is dead. But these seven mysterious guys show up and they save her. They get her heart working in a very mysterious way. So now our princess is living on borrowed time, trying to figure out what's going on. And my favorite part of this retelling is that you find out right away, perhaps our bad guy isn't the bad guy we thought of. We've grown up on the fairy tale of Snow White with the evil queen being out to get her. And you learn very, very early on, like page four or something, that the queen isn't really who we should be looking at. There's someone else pulling the strings behind everything. So our princess is going to really be going on this journey of trying to figure out what is it that is evil in her life and who she should and should not be trusting. It's a really great retelling. You know, I really enjoy reading through it and finding that you've got a princess that our actual young adult community could look up to. As a middle school teacher, I love finding books that aren't just about people being saved by other people. Kind of the idea of figuring out your own problems and how to go from there. And Sophie's really working on that. And that's kind of as far as I can give you without giving you spoiler alerts left and right. But it's a really great book. Again, it's Jennifer Donnelly's Poisoned, and it is a quick read and really enjoyable. So I definitely suggest it. Thank you all for listening to me. And thanks again, ladies, for having me on.
Thanks so much, Sally, for your check-in and also for all of your support. Listeners, we hope you enjoyed listening to what Sally's been reading. If you are interested in our Unabridged Ambassador Program, check it out at unabridgedpod.com/ambassadors. We'd love to have you join us. So today, listeners, we wanted to give you an update. Like I said in the beginning, we have shared the challenges that we chose this year, and then we kind of touched on them again mid-year. And so we wanted to circle back around to that. And I think we're each just going to kind of say where we are and where we wanted to be and give you some updates. So Jen, do you want to start us off?
Sure. So as I alluded to in the bookish check-in, I got a little desperate when I realized we were recording today because I want to scream at someone that there's still over a month left in the year. And of course, I'm going to finish these challenges. And then I'm thinking, you know, why do I have this desperation about a deadline that I set? So
I do want to add in that on our document that we work from, Sarah and I have nothing. And Jen has multiple bullet points with a lot of statistics and percentages on there. So I'm sure she will share some of that with you all, but it was funny when I opened the document to note the difference here.
Well, y'all know I love a spreadsheet. And so when we set these challenges, I set up a tab for the challenges with the list of books and where I could find them. And I have percentages that I'll share in just a moment. So just wait. It'll be very exciting. So I would say overall, I have done pretty well. I think that I'm glad that I did each one that I chose. I chose each one for a different reason. And I think all of them have added something to my reading life this year. So the main one that I focused on from the beginning was Book Riot's Read Harder Challenge. And that is one that just gives you a list of categories, probably that would challenge most readers. And you're supposed to meet each of those categories. And so it has definitely forced me, that sounds horrible, encouraged me to read some genres that I don't normally read. And I read pretty widely. Like I'm a pretty random reader. I read a little bit of everything. But for example, there was to read a horror novel from an independent publisher. I don't think I read many indie publishers. So that raised my awareness about something that I might want to try to do more in my reading life. So for that one, I read Grady Hendrix's Horror Store, which is great. I really liked it. Obviously, the food book that I talked about at the beginning of the episode, that's one. One that I have not started yet is read an edition of a literary magazine, digital or physical. And I've picked the one I want to read, Foreshadow YA, which has some great authors associated with it. I used to read literary magazines all the time when I was in grad school, and it's just, I just haven't done it for a while. So that's something I was like, oh yeah, why am I not still doing that? So I think that one overall has been successful. I would say I finished 22 of 24 categories. There's one that I checked, but I feel like I'm cheating a little bit. So I'll probably try to read another book by the end of the year. So I feel like I completed it faithfully without cheating. So that was read a retelling of a classic of the canon fairy tale or myth by an author of color. And it's not really a retelling. It's a book that's inspired by fairy tales. So I didn't feel like that was totally legitimate. So that was the first one. I also set 20 backlists. I will just say Sarah and Ashley are laughing at me right now. And it is fine. But I just want to say they're laughing at me a little bit.
I'm not laughing.
I didn't think I was. I'm just smiling. I laughed in the beginning about the document. Okay. And well, and I think that I felt and believed that I was really focused on meeting my goals. And then, you know, life is about comparisons and we can try to not make them. But on the scale, I am not at the Jen level of devotion to this. So
compulsive.
And I'll get to why.
The Jen level of compulsion.
I'll come around to mine, but I definitely did some things that, as you were describing, if I made any faces, is because as you were describing the cheating, I was like, oh, I think a lot of what I did was what you are classifying as cheating. But, and I'll get there. That's okay. That's okay.
All right. So my second challenge was the 20 backlist in 2020. And I really wanted to do this because I realized that I was reading a lot of new releases. I was getting a lot of e-galleys and ARCs. And I just had all of these great books sitting on my shelves that were always getting pushed to the bottom of the stack because I had this new stuff rolling in. And so for that one, I just in the last month or so have made a really concerted effort to refocus on that because that the shininess of the new book is never going to go away for me. I always want to read the new thing and I always want to get the new e-galleys. And so I think that's just something I have to pay attention to. So for that one, I have 5 more to go. So I'm at 75%. So I've read 15 of the 20, which I think is pretty solid. I do have one coming up, The Ladder to the Sky by John Boyne. So I'm very excited about that after all of our love for him on the podcast. So the last kind of a double, but it's really just one that I talk about the tournament of books all the time. I have never made it through all of the books on the tournament of books bracket. And that is still true this year. I almost made it. So for the tournament of books in March, they actually start with 18 books. And then there's a play-in round to get to the 16 books in the bracket. I didn't read one of the play-in books. So I read 17 of the 18. And for that one, I read Bernardine Evaristo's Girl, Woman, Other, which I absolutely loved and will probably be one of my top books of the year. I read Susan Choi's Trust Exercise, which I think is absolutely brilliant. And I read Dexter Palmer's Mary Toft or the Rabbit Queen, which is absolutely bizarre. And I loved it. And I never would have picked it up without the TOV. Then just this fall in October, there was the Super Rooster. So the Tournament of Books has been around for 16 years. So since there were 16 champions, they set up a bracket with those 16 books. And that one caused me to pick up Jennifer Egan's A Visit from the Goon Squad, which I had had for a really long time and never read. I read Toni Morrison's A Mercy, which is, it's Toni Morrison. So it's no shock there that that's brilliant. I talked about that one recently. So I read, again, 17 of the 18. I still have not read The Sisters Brothers, though I want to by the end of the year. They also did, this is going to get really in the weeds for non-TOB fans, but I'll just say the zombie books I didn't read. So I didn't get to those. So technically, I read, I guess, 17 of the 20, but I'm going to say 17 of the 18. So yeah, I think that's been a good one. I just always love those. I love reading the different judges' perspectives on books. Even judges who don't love the books that I picked, I appreciate hearing their points of view. And it's just a fun event that I look forward to every year. All right. So that's it. Those are all my challenges. I am hoping to finish the first two by the end of the year, but we'll see. I'll post an update on social media when we're actually at the end of the year. So, all right, that's it.
Yeah, Jen, that sounds great. And I like that reflection on, I do think, you know, if the goal is for us to push ourselves to read things we wouldn't normally read, it's helpful to have some of these things in place. Cause I think for me too, that I have read some stuff that I might not have made time for otherwise. So I really like that part of doing the challenges. What about you, Sarah? What are your updates?
So I'm just going to keep it real. My challenges were Beat the Backlist Reading Challenge from Novel Night, and also along with the Unread Shelf Project, which I was just trying to read. So Unread Shelf, I have done abysmally. What I have realized about myself this year in times of crisis, reading is really difficult for me. And I feel like I've been in at least mild to major crisis, you know, like we all have all year. And it's really difficult for me to concentrate on reading. And when I do read, it's really hard for me to read things that are difficult. And I feel like we pick out a lot of books that are awesome for the podcast, but deal with very heavy things. So like outside of my podcast reading, I feel like my reading has been very small. So I don't have any statistics. I only know, and I also know that I did not want to buy new books, but I did this year because I only had a lot of like literary fiction and really heavy books. And so I've purchased, like for example, that chocolate pot one I talked about. So that's where I'm at. I haven't done very well. And I think that for next year, I need something more specific because both of these were just so, I thought it would be easier to complete because they were so general and I could choose what I wanted. But I think for me, I need something that is more specific and more driven by like finding a particular book in a particular category. So I think that if I do a reading challenge again, I will do something that is a little bit more like, I need a little bit more direction. Mm-hmm. I cannot be trusted to motivate myself. So upon reflection, I have learned something from this reading challenge. However, I feel very embarrassed that I didn't do very well, and I have to report it to our listening audience. So, but not bad enough to try to fly through any a book. So,
I mean, we can only hope that 2021 is not as much a complete crisis from day one. Yes. So, yeah, everything will be easier, right?
Yeah. Well, let's hope.
Well, and I'm sure you're not alone, Sarah, in having plans, reading, and otherwise derailed. So I think that's consistent. I mean, we've certainly seen on Bookstagram that there are some people who the changes meant that they were able to read a lot more. And then there were others for whom it meant they were reading a lot mm-hmm. less. So I think we see kind of both things happening.
Well, and I also think, too, what I've realized about myself, it depends on what kind of because I've been in like crisis mode before in my life about other things. And sometimes I want to totally disengage from everyone and only want to be in a book. I remember mm-hmm. one time after I had my daughter, my mom was here and I had a lot of postpartum depression and she sat with me the whole day. And all I did was read. I didn't talk to her. I totally disengaged. So I think it's like, it just depends on what it is. And so, and who would have known? I never knew that I was going to have to know what my reaction to a pandemic would be, but apparently it's not to read. So there's that. Okay. I feel like I've divulged enough. So Ashley, what about you? How is your reading challenge going?
Yeah. So I also had a lot of adjustments as far as when we switched to being home. And a big impact for me was the loss of audiobooks. I really relied on listening to those. And Sarah and Jen always tease me about how fast I listen to them. So I run them on like super speed, which I love, and then consume them pretty quickly. And now that I do not drive nearly as frequently, and you know, we're not driving around from school to school for our job, it has really impacted my listening experiences, which means that my total book consumption was really, I had to make some adjustments for that. But over time, I think that that's all worked out for me. I have gotten better about listening at home sometimes. Like, I will make a point to put headphones in and when I'm doing the laundry or things like that, which normally I don't prefer, but you know, that was a way to kind of incorporate more. And then I've tried to adjust as far as Kindle and print books to compensate somewhat. Anyway, all that to say that I chose the Modern Mrs. Darcy challenge and I was really pleased with that choice. I think it was a good fit for me because, like Sarah said, this one is more specific than some of the really broad ones, but not quite as specific as like the Read Harder challenge that Jen chose. So in that sense, it worked pretty well for me. It has 10 categories, and then one of those categories is to read 3 books by one author. So I mapped it out. I will try before we release this episode to have a diagram of what it looked like in the beginning and what it looks like now, because that goes around to what Jen might classify as cheating. I had a plan, and then I've had to multiple times adjust that plan to accommodate what I've read, but I'm still working toward meeting the categories. So for example, when I chose the 3 books by the same author, my candidates were Morrison, McCarthy, and Marilyn Robinson. And now I have Jenny Han down as the person for whom I've read 3 books. I love Jenny Han. However, it is not literary fiction in the same way that Cormac McCarthy, Toni Morrison, or Marilyn Robinson are. But I've had to recognize that about myself, that I had these really lofty goals. And then the dumpster fire started happening. And I had to think about how I could still achieve some of these goals in a more manageable way. And sometimes, like for another one, I wanted to read for the book published in The Decade You Were Born, I wanted to do one of Marquez's books, but I don't have that here in the house. And so I wound up switching to The House of Spirits because that's what I have. So like I said, I've made some adjustments for ease of access, but also for, I've adjusted my expectations as far as, I did read one of Marilyn Robinson's books. I read Housekeeping, which I loved, and I wouldn't have read it if it hadn't been for this challenge. But I have Gilead that I want to read, and I also have Lila. So I felt like I have those in play, but in order to finish, like Jen said, we do still have time. I am going to meet every category, but in order to finish, you know, this month and next month, I think I have two that I need to do this month and two that I'm going to do next month to wrap up each of the 10 categories. And I feel like that's feasible, but then I have to give up some of the things like the Robinson books. I probably won't get to those other two this year, but I've really appreciated the challenge. And like I said, I think that one was a good balance for me of not super difficult, but it is pushing me. I mean, The Murmur of Bees is a book I would not have read. I am absolutely loving it. It had been on my TBR radar for quite a while, but I wouldn't have made the time for it. So I have appreciated that part of the challenge. And it also has made me pay a little bit more attention to my reading, which I think is always a good thing also. So that's where I am with that. I also wanted to work
on. Can I just interject really fast? I don't think that's cheating. I will just say, I think changing your plans is not cheating. I meant cheating because.
It didn't quite meet the category.
Is that why? The category. Yeah. Cause it said a retelling. And I just think a book that's loosely inspired by fairy tale tropes is not the same as a retelling. So yeah, that's all I meant. So yeah, I don't think you are cheating.
Okay. Well, and I will say that it's been good for me. I've had to reflect on the list several times and it's been good for me to make those changes. And it's just also humbling because I love Jenny Han. I think she's a great writer. There's nothing wrong with her, but I do think it's funny to look at like what I wanted to have happen and then the reality, and like I still need to read a classic, and I've changed that plan multiple times. I am now to The Catcher in the Rye, which I still have not ever read, so I adjusted because that one is much shorter and because it was on my shelf. So you know, it's just funny to have to reconcile those things with yourself and be like, okay, this is where we are. And these are the things that I'm going to do to make it happen. So I did that. And then also I wanted to work on the unread shelf. And I actually felt really discouraged about that because I shared at the beginning of the year that 2 years ago now, so coming up on two Januaries ago, I reorganized my shelves so that I had one bookshelf and then another, most of the other bookshelf, that were books that I personally brought into our home that I have not read, that I wanted to make it a priority to read. And I still really haven't touched those, but I did on my spreadsheet this year mark when a book was from my unread shelf. And I think I got into some tricky. It was hard to quantify sometimes whether something qualified. So for a while, I did a subscription service. Are those books technically your unread shelf? I did work to read them. They were new to me. I had purchased them, but they weren't exactly on that shelf. So that kind of thing. But when I counted it up, I had 15 that I have worked through from that I would consider unread that I have purchased one way or another. And then I also went back as I was preparing for this and marked all the ones that were borrowed that I read. And I had 12 of those because I had really prioritized reading books I've borrowed, because I have borrowed books, particularly from Jen and Sarah. I have a few from other friends, but largely Jen and Sarah I've had them. It's disgraceful how long I've had them. I've had them. They probably forget that they owned them because they're like, this book is dead to me because I'm never going to get it back. And I don't want to be that person. So I'd been prioritizing trying to read some of those this year. So then I went through my chart and counted those up as well. And I was like, oh, all in all, that I'm glad that's a time where it is nice to look back. And I do feel like I made more progress than I thought I did because I didn't really touch those two shelves. So, you know, there were things in my room that I wanted to read. There were things I had borrowed from either of you that were on a stack somewhere that I wanted to read. And it was nice to feel like I had made more progress than I thought in that category since I still haven't gotten to that shelf. So, yeah, I think those are my updates. I'm okay with where I am on it. And I wish I had completed it. I still have more than I should for the amount of time we have left in the year, but I think it's doable. So,
yeah, that sounds great. I look forward to being surprised by what books Ashley returns.
I have oh so many of yours, my friend.
That's hilarious.
I already gave her like a whole, I had a paper bag full of books to return to her, and I still have a frightening number of them lingering. So,
well, as has been established many times before, I do have a slight book buying problem. So I am more than happy to share because it makes me feel a little more virtuous about the way I'm spending my money.
Which is like, I am an amazing recipient of this because I probably have read more books that are owned by Jen than I have books that are owned by me. That is the truth. That is the truth. I think that is very likely because the books that Jen has, I want to read. And a lot of the books that we own, our house is full of books. But it's books that they go back to what I desire to be as a reader versus who I really am as a reader. And all of them are good books. I mean, all of them are good books. But I do think, I mean, it's what you were saying, Sarah, that a lot of the ones on my shelf are literary and fiction. And I know I'm going to enjoy them, but I'm not going to pick them up one after the other after the other. Right. So.
Yes.
Whereas YA fantasy, I can read that. I can read that back to back to back. So, okay. So for our Give Me One today, we wanted to wrap up with a favorite holiday song. So Sarah, what's yours?
So I know this will become, is not a shock, but I love holiday music and holiday songs. And it's really hard for me to pick just one, but I grew up going to church and really appreciating the hymns that we sing at Christmas. And my very favorite song is O Holy Night. And when the first few chords of that song start, it's just like my heart flutters. I love it so much. And I mean, I love so many renditions of it. Amy Grant has a rendition that I just think is amazing. And since you all know, I have started my Hamilton fandom very late in the game, but Leslie Odom Jr. just put out a new Christmas album for this year, and he sings O Holy Night, and it is fantastic. So I highly recommend checking that out. But I just love that song. I think it's beautiful. I think the arrangement is beautiful. I love the words. And as a Christian, it means a lot to me. So I just love that song. And it just takes me to this really great place. So I love listening to it.
Awesome. Yeah, that's a beautiful one. Mm-hmm. What about you, Jen? What's yours?
So I really like Christmas music too, but I will say the first one that popped into my head is Do You Hear What I Hear? And when I was little, even, we would sing Christmas music in music class. And I'm not a great singer, but I love to sing. And I loved to sing that one. I just felt like I was the best singer in the world when I was singing that song. So I just really love that one. It has a lot of good memories associated with it. I think it's really sweet. And so, yeah, that's my pick.
What about you, Ashley?
I also really love them. I played the piano growing up, and so I played a lot of the Christmas songs and still do. Those are probably the ones that I play the most on the piano because I don't play a whole lot these days, but there are times that I'll play, but around the holidays, I really still love to play them. And I like all of them in the minor chords. So What Child Is This is the one that came to my mind that I just think is really beautiful and is so lovely. I like the lyrics. I like the way that the song sounds. But in general, the ones that I've always liked the best are kind of the slower moving ones and also the ones that are in those minor chords. So, well, we listeners, we would be interested in knowing if you did a challenge this year and if so, how it went for you. And if you didn't do one, we'd also be interested in knowing if you're thinking about doing one for the future or if you've done any in the past that you liked, because we will be revisiting this, I think, for 2021. So we can check that out. So yeah, thanks. Let us know on social media and thanks for listening.
Do you have comments or opinions about what you heard today? We'd love to hear them.
You can find us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at UnabridgedPod or on the web at UnabridgedPod.com for a list of ways to support us.
We'd like to thank Jared Featherstone, who composed our theme music, Strings of Light, and Katie Amy of Amy Photography, our podcast photographer. Thanks for listening to Unabridged.